Hey everybody, really quick, unexpected visit from Mike in this episode. So there's a couple of points where there's either going to be conspicuous dropped audio or audio quality changes. I did the best to patch things up as best as possible. Apologies to Ashley. We didn't manage to miss all that much of your email. It's just not entirely 100% here, but we saved all the bits of it that we could. Sorry about the audio quality changes. Nothing is wrong with your listening device. Thanks a lot, Mike. Anyway, on to the episode. All right. So I made, at one point in my notes, I made like an allusion to a certain director, and so instead of it coming in the middle of the episode, maybe we should just talk about it now. Lucas, where we are when we're recording this, the Oscars just happened.
Okay.
And I just wanted to know if you had any lingering thoughts coming out of this movie season.
I actually think my big thought is just, I don't know, I follow the Oscars every year, and just because it's kind of a sick fascination for me. I like to see the freak show. I like to see the lizards go up on stage. And my big takeaway this year is, I don't know, there was a lot of movies that I feel like people actually watched and enjoyed this year. Ever since they switched to 10 movies, it really was a sorry state of affairs when you would have like the majority of the movies were movies nobody watched. Nobody watched Coda, Will. Okay.
I watched it after the fact, but yes, for what you're saying, yes.
No one watched The Green Book. Surely you never watched The Green Book.
No. No.
You know what I mean? So there's these movies, like this year that was Naiad. I was like, right. No one watched Naiad. Come on, stop. Stop with all that. But this movie, there was a lot of movies that, this year rather, there was a lot of movies people actually watched, and it felt like, you know, this kind of mainstream Hollywood movie was a big deal again, with Oppenheimer and Poor Things kind of having a adventurous, risque European sensibility to it, and that kind of sweeping up in award season, and, you know, Marty, Killers of the Flower Moon. I don't know, it felt like a big year for Hollywood, and as much as I like to celebrate all cinema, not just Hollywood, I thought it was a fun time. And the one that I really cared about was, it was cool that Godzilla won an Oscar.
Yeah, that was cool.
Especially because, you know, the Oscars, especially this year where they're doing, whenever they do the actor awards, it's kind of this like ego stroking session where all these actors come out, and even though they're not getting a reward, every nominee gets like their resume listed off to them and how amazing and special and perfect they are. And I was like, okay, enough of the ego stroking. So whenever like someone for an independent movie, like a short film, whenever they get nominated, I always like seeing their speeches, because it's like, a real human being, not someone who's more stem cell than human, not someone who's more Ozempic than human being up on stage.
Someone with their real teeth.
Exactly. And my heart was warmed by the Godzilla acceptance speech. Those people were so excited, and they all looked like real people, and the excitement was just palpable. And I really loved that movie, so it was nice to see that get some kind of award recognition from Tinseltown.
I was happy for everybody who seemed to like it, and I was pleased that my banking on the Academy not watching or caring about that type of movie was proven wrong. Once again, lost big in my family Oscars pool because I can't pick this thing for to save my life. But welcome to Elwood City Limits, the episodic Arthur podcast. Will Young here with Lucas Mancini. And of course, I imagine there would be a bit more passion, Lucas, if there was a 90s Chinese movies Oscars that was going on as instead, because that's what you're currently on.
Yes, that would be stiff competition. Who would win the 90s Chinese movie Oscar? Would it be Mr. Vampire? Would it be Once Upon a Time in China? Would it be Iron Monkey? The list goes on and on. It's endless. I guess there kind of was 90s Chinese Oscars in that it was just the Hong Kong Movie Awards in the 90s. And it's funny, I've been looking those up because I've been watching all these Chinese movies, and I'm like, wow, like, it, like, if you look up what was up for the Hong Kong Cinema Awards in, like, 1985, it's, like, five of the best physical action movies you've ever seen in your life. So they were really spoiled with that Hong Kong cinema for the last couple decades. It's been a fun journey.
You know, you've reminded me, and I swear this isn't because this is we're talking about a Bud and LaDonna episode that I'm not talking about the show. I just remembered this is really what I wanted to start off with here, because we're a podcast that's all about animation and the appreciation of the illustrated form. And I feel like we both would probably have something to say about this, especially you, Lucas, because you had a couple of very touching and heartfelt words to say about this when we're recording this in mid-March. Unfortunately, just about a week ago, Akira Toriyama passed away, the creator of Dragon Ball, Sandland, and Dr. Slump, and one of the most, up to his death, one of the most respected and revered manga creators and anime directors, and really influencers of all time in the medium of anime and manga.
Even in the medium of art, period. This is one of those things where you really don't recognize someone's impact until it's in retrospect. Not only on the world at large, but on me personally. You know, we're animation fans, Will. We talk about animation every week. And there's something about art when it's done so perfectly at its highest level that the magic of it, you know, the mechanics of what make it work become invisible to you because the reaction is purely visceral, right? Like, I think about, you know, watching a movie from, like, Scorsese, right? Watching Casino. Yeah. At first, you're like, wow, the filmmaking is so spectacular. But then it works so well that you start to forget about the seams of the filmmaking and then you're just emotionally invested in the movie. So Akira Toriyama, you know, his art, specifically Dragon Ball, is so iconic, so ubiquitous that I really never took the time to just like sit down and really stare at it and try and understand kind of what makes it what it is. And doing that now after he passed away, I can confidently say that he, you know, of course, Osamu Tezuka is the god of manga, as Buster reminded us in that Arthur episode.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, he was the generation before our generation, Will. And I think Akira Toriyama is the manga artist of our generation. And you can see it from the kind of outpouring from artists in all mediums and the impact he had. And not just artists, you know, people from around the globe. A truly international impact. You know, this isn't one of those anime that are only watched by Americans or Japanese people. It's watched and beloved the world over. But thinking about it from what we do in terms of, like, Arthur, I've been watching with my anime club Dr. Slump, which is his the series he did before Dragon Ball, and it's not a serious series, and it's not a fighting series. It's more so kind of like a kid's show, or the manga was a kid's manga that was gag-based. This is little robot girl, Dr. Slump. She lives in Penguin Village, and there's wacky adventures. And through the art of not even manga, but like cartooning, Akira Toriyama, he is amazing, like breathtaking at character design, at drawing a character using simple lines, simple shapes, and you are immediately able to tell everything you need to know about that character. Their whole personality is laid bare and present before you. And I didn't really click into this until I watched Dr. Slump, because unlike Dragon Ball, those characters aren't already iconic. I don't already have this extra context of these characters being famous. And in Dr. Slump, he's just throwing characters at you. It's like, in this episode, Dr. Slump meets a bug and an elephant and a alligator and an 80s rocker guy and a punk and this guy and a mailman. And you're seeing all these characters in quick succession. And he's just like, it's just character after character of these like amazing characterizations and cartoon characters. And it's really someone using that medium, the medium of cartooning, at the height of his powers. So, I mean, I could go on and on about, I love the way he draws cars. No one's been better at drawing little cars than Akira Toriyama. But I really felt the impact. And, you know, I don't often We've done a couple of these eulogies on the show, Will, and I don't often feel that emotional, but it definitely took me aback that day when Akira Toriyama passed away, because I'm just such a huge anime fan in general.
Yeah, and I mean, it took me a little while to even realize what exactly that meant. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, he is, like, it was kind of like, oh, he was still alive. And because I don't really keep up with, I'm a very much a casual anime fan, and I certainly don't keep up with where Dragon Ball is in modern times. But what I realized over kind of the day of thinking about it is that still, I am one of the many millions and millions and millions of people who have, or at least had, an emotional connection with Dragon Ball when I was much younger. It was a real gateway to me for, like, not just anime, but storytelling in general. And I was all about Dragon Ball Z, especially when I was a bit younger. So, yeah, and it really made me realize, especially with all the tributes and all of the fan art and all of the different representations of Toriyama's art, like, just how gifted he was. And I feel for modern fans of his stuff, whether that's Dragon Ball Super or anything else, that much like when, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but the creator of Berserk passed away and Berserk wasn't finished. And now I'm pretty sure Dragon Ball Super was still going on. So that really sucks. And so I feel for his fans in that way. And of course, his loved ones, but he leaves an enormous legacy, an enormous shadow that is cast over anime, manga. You could even say, as you said, Lucas, art in general. So I wanted to make sure that we said something here, because he definitely meant something. His works meant something, and still do mean something to both of us. Yeah, so sorry to start us off on a bit of a somber note there, but I wanted to make sure that we did that before jumping into anything else, such as our emails over at elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com. We do have a couple of emails here before we start off the episode. First one is from John. Hello, all. I've just discovered your wonderful podcast. I'm still listening to season 2 and working my way through the series. I'm so late to the game, but I'm glad I am here now. I grew up on Arthur very heavily in my childhood and still occasionally revisit it to stay sane in this ever-changing world. I love your takes on the show and how you add so many pop culture and movie references to the show. Still cannot get over how much you both loved Buster's "I'm the one who burped" line from the pilot. That's my favorite Buster line, with how casual he delivers it and his face. My favorite character was always Binky and his lines. My personal favorite is when Binky meets the band Binky in Arthur's fantasy, and he gets in the limo and says, "Sorry, no more room," and shuts the door. The comedic timing is so perfect. Seeing as you guys are coming up on season 20 and have only a few more seasons left to cover, will the podcast continue after the final episode in some way, shape, or form? Would love to hear you guys talk about Arthur fan theories, or maybe look at different characters and maybe do something like character studies. Thanks for all you guys do in helping me relive part of my childhood. John, simple answer is, I don't know. We haven't talked about it yet, and I don't plan to talk about it yet, because there is not much time left of Arthur, but, you know, it's never a guarantee that we're going to finish it. And I say that even with the finish line more in sight than it's ever been. It's like, there's still quite a bit to get through. So let's think about that when it's time to think about it. And it's not time to think about it yet.
I'll say this. I have good news for him, which is, if he wants to hear us talk about Arthur fan theories, keep listening past season 2. We definitely get to it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you've got a lot to discover, my friend.
Yes.
And we have an email from Ashley Hollingsworth. Ahoy, hoy, Will and Lucas. I was so excited when I saw the new episode of ECL pop up on my feed. Can't believe we made it to season 20. Buster's second chance is so weird. When I saw Arthur burst into the sugar bowl rocking the leather jacket, my jaw was agape. That's an image I won't be forgetting anytime soon. The episode really took me by surprise. I never knew where it was going next.
Will, the return of Mike. Mike, yes, is back.
Ah. Man, okay, I gotta stay super, super, super still. Mike's like a BT. I just started playing Death Stranding again, so I'm just like, all right, if I just stand very, if I sit very still, then Mike won't know I'm here. We were talking about, we were on Ashley's email, so sorry, Ashley, it's a little broken up here. On to the next paragraph. Skipping ahead, Serial really took me by surprise. Going in completely blind, I never would have guessed it was a satire on the podcast Serial. While I wasn't a big fan of that podcast, I did listen to a few episodes for class at the time and was aware of the critique on it, so I thought Buster's dilemma of whether he should report the truth at the risk of jeopardizing the story or keep the drama going by making Arthur look guilty was poignant. When the moral came up, I was like, wow, they're actually going there. Blows my mind because it's a kids' show. Also, just hearing the Arthur gang say podcast was weird to me because I've been watching since season one. The show is always stuck in the 90s for me. So anytime we see the gang in modern times, it's a bit shocking. Not a bad thing at all. Just takes me by surprise as one of the old heads. The podcast Buster and Bitsy were listening to gave me strong Beyond Belief Fact or Fiction with Jonathan Frakes vibes. Since Serial came up during the recent podcast, it got me thinking about my favorite cereals. Similar to Lucas, I would also dub Cinnamon Toast Crunch as my favorite. I don't eat it as much as I used to, but there was a period not too long ago when I was eating it on the regular, oftentimes as a midnight snack. I was also a huge fan of Fruity Pebbles and mini frosted shredded wheat. These days, I also find myself leaning towards the boring cereals, like plain Cheerios or regular Corn Flakes, but I still like to add a spoonful of brown sugar for a little sweetness. And sorry, Will, I got to agree with Lucas about Raisin Bran. I'm not the biggest fan of raisins, but there are some days where a bowl of the bran hits that sweet spot. Sad to report, Trix in the States are also round little balls. I miss the days when they were shaped like little fruits. Happy to see season 20 off to a decent start. Thank you very much, Ashley, and thank you, John, both of you, for your emails. You can send yours to elwoodcitylimits@gmail.com. If you're a patron, if you're one of our patrons, don't forget that we have the latest episode of ECL Origins, which we are talking about The Amazing World of Gumball. Great, great episode that we did where Lucas took the reins a little bit in terms of watching a show that he knew way more about than I did. And that was a very interesting time. So make sure you check that out if you haven't yet, patrons. And of course, if you're not a patron, you can sign up at patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. And you can join the likes of patrons such as John Griswold and Shander LeFave Boughton, Muppet Baby Cat and Yoshi. Allison Archambault. I'll say your name twice, whatever. that's my mistake, not yours. Nicholas DeMarco and Robert Morrison. Thank you to Eddie Castillo and RG. Thank you to Rory Forever and Jeff L. Thank you to Derek Watson Jr., Crimson Vision, and Quantum Wave. Thank you to Vonnie G. and Ann Perry. And thank you to Dear Miss Elizabeth, a.k.a. Z. Welcome back. Now, like I said, I was not trying to not talk about this episode because, I mean, when I looked at the summaries of what this is about, it's just like, oh, boy. Okay. You see, I guess I see the name Bud, and it's just like, all right, well, here we go. But it's a little bit more complex than that, as we'll find out. And we talk about he said to start us off here, which actually starts with Bionic Bunny in the cold open. Bionic Bunny facing off with his nemesis, Dr. Sumac, and her living cacti, as well as a giant man-eating flower. Dr. Sumac, of course, appears to be a poison ivy style part of Bionic Bunny's rogues gallery.
In this opening, it's kind of reminded me of the first level of Mario Sunshine when you fight Piranha and, like, throw him out. Like, the area that they find the talking flower in is very reminiscent of that Mario Sunshine level.
Yes, you're right. In fact, like, I see it in my head. That's the part I've played of Sunshine the most, either at, like, Walmart stations or at a friend's house of Mario Sunshine. So Dr. Sumac is about to devour, the man-eating flower is about to devour Bionic Bunny, but Arthur and Buster are blocking the way because they start arguing about what actually happened next. Both of them think that something different happened in this particular story, and it blocks Bionic Bunny from escaping, and Bionic Bunny even looks at the camera, so some kind of mutters something about, like, fans not knowing what they want. So Bionic Bunny, a little snippy when it comes to his fans. And he presumably gets eaten. This Bionic Bunny story is part of the main episode here, where we've got an interesting four characters. We've got Arthur and Buster, we've got George, and we've got Carl. Carl, once again, showing up. getting ready to watch the Bionic Bunny special called Sumac No More. I'm happy to say that as much as I've been critical of the show introducing new characters and not using them, Carl's getting pretty good use, I gotta say. Especially in more recent seasons we've been talking about. They're bringing him back, and he's not just there as window dressing. They're having him play roles in stories that fit the character that they've already introduced, which I'm very happy to see.
Yes, he's very distinct. You know, this episode, basically very much a character-based episode. They don't really leave the living room. And the characters at play are George, Buster, Arthur, DW, Bud, and of course, Carl, right? Every character is actually used fairly well, right? And because it's such a character-focused episode, this episode's got pretty good writing in terms of everyone's got something to do. Everyone has a driving narrative in this space, and they're all kind of bouncing off of each other. And that's where the drama in this episode lies. And it's interesting because you want to talk about how the new characters are used. I think actually Bud is used all right in this episode as well. And you know me, number one Bud hater. And if we look at he said, and directly juxtapose it with Bunny Trouble, you could see how, you know, the strengths of he said are negated by the weaknesses in Bunny Trouble. That LaDonna could have been anybody in that episode. But I don't want to get it too ahead of ourselves. We'll get into the mix maybe after we talk
yes.
about both.
So we've got these four here. They're getting ready to watch this special that happens every year. And they've even prepared special snacks. Like, Mom gives them a plate of Brussels sprouts along with all the other snacks. Carl is there, but he's not a Bionic Bunny fan. He says he only watched it one time, and he didn't really like it. It's not very realistic, so it's not his thing. As you said, Lucas, Bud and DW are also in the living room. They want to build the biggest tower of cows in the world to go for the world record, which there is no record for highest tower of cows, but they're measuring against the highest pancake stack, which is 234 or something like that. And they are building the tower right next to the TV, so they're all in the same part here. Bud also says, I've never seen Bionic Bunny. And DW throws herself in front of the TV, and you're not seeing it now, because she needs his help for the Tower of Cows. This is really good. Unfortunately, while this special is beginning to air, the Reeds' cable goes out. Or at least it seems to be their cable and not their power specifically. So even in the mid 2010s, like, the Reeds were still like having, like, I guess it was probably like a set top box or something, or would it be called a DVR? Yeah, probably.
Oh yeah, like, what is it even? Yeah, do they have fiber op? This is definitely not rabbit ears.
No,
which are now defunct. And this is probably one of my favorite kind of throwaway gags in the episode, is to fix the cable. Mom Reed is on the phone with customer service, and we get a lot of good. This is one for the adults,
yeah.
Kind of customer service phone humor. Press 8 if you'd like to hear this message in Greek. Press 9 if you'd like to do a 40-minute survey, which are very funny options.
And so the cable is out, they're missing the special, and Buster and Arthur are going to try to explain what happens to George and Carl, because they just want to, like, make sure they're in the know for when the cable comes back. But they both disagree on the order of events. I feel like there have been at least a couple of episodes that we have jokingly referred to as Rashomon, like baby's first Rashomon or whatever it is, but this is literally the same storytelling device. Is like, Arthur is saying what happens next, and then Buster's like, no, that didn't happen. Or no, sorry, it's the opposite way. Buster is saying what happens, and Arthur's like, no, that happened in a different special. You're confusing it with this. And they're disagreeing with the order of events here. I should also say, Buster's attempts to get the cable back include an urban legend he heard that if you flick the light switch on and off, then that'll fix the cable, which is very kid pill.
You ever heard of this?
No.
Have you ever heard of that in your
life? Is this, like, real? Do people?
I don't know.
No, I never have. And
write in if you've ever done that.
Yes. And also if getting in front of the TV and begging on your hands and knees helped, because Buster does that too. I kind of didn't summarize what exactly they're talking about. The Dr. Sumac special of Bionic Bunny is him, you know, tangling with Dr. Sumac, as we mentioned, who is like a rat character who has like nature for hands and limbs and stuff like that. And has like a lab coat on. So not total Poison Ivy. Can't get away with that on Arthur. But I didn't want to get too into the weeds on like describing what they're describing, because it's not really important for the episode. So while this is going on, and DW and Bud are building the Tower of Cows, of course Carl's not interested in Bionic Bunny. So he goes on, he keeps going over to their tower and suggesting better ways for them to build it. Like he's suggesting like buttresses and different stacking formations in order to build like an actual functioning tower. So this is more what he's interested in, which I don't blame him there. At some point, Carl is trying to build this tower, but then Arthur and Buster start arguing, and DW and Bud start arguing because Bud's interested in Bionic Bunny, and DW's trying to pry him away. And Carl minds the noise. He's getting overstimulated. And so George quiets everybody down. And so he attempts to tell the rest of the story of the special so that everyone will stop arguing and Carl can concentrate. And his story, his version of the story, I do want to touch on briefly, because it starts out normal-ish for what would be in a Bionic Bunny cartoon. But then Bionic Bunny falls down a hole and he meets three animals that are all dressed up very dapperly. And we realize that George's story has gone into what in the Arthur universe is called the Breeze and the Brambles. Did you recognize this as they started doing it?
Well, the iconography is obviously, but I can't remember the lady's name. The lady who would always draw those dapper animals, and we've talked about this before on the show.
You mean like Frog and Toad?
Well, not just Frog and Toad. There's the, you've probably seen memes of this where she's like, those animals are dressing. Just a second.
Do you know what this is a parody, like a direct parody of?
Beyond Frog and Toad, or is it a parody of Frog and
Toad? No, so it's parodying something very specific. The Breeze and the Brambles is a parody of The Wind in the Willows. Are you familiar with The Wind in the Willows?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. Catherine, oh my goodness gracious. Kenneth Graham made The Wind in the Willows.
Yes.
But I've only seen adaptations. I'm not familiar with like the original novel.
Yes, and neither am I. What I'm familiar with is there was, when I was quite young and very early in the mornings on YTV, there was the stop motion animation of The Wind in the Willows. And it was really like weird, and they don't get into it much here. So like Bionic Bunny falls into this hole in Ferret's house, and there's a toad, I believe a badger, and then Ferret, and they're all dressed up in people clothes and speaking in these like British accents. And that is reductively what you could call The Wind in the Willows. It's very much like British pastoral countryside animals dressed up in like sweaters and smoking pipes and like British gentlemen. And whether it's in the books, a little bit like Beatrix Potter, Peter Rabbit, that kind of thing.
Yes, Beatrix Potter is what I was trying to think of earlier, by the way.
I see. Yeah, and The Wind in the Willows is very much, you could call it that, but in here in Arthur it's called The Breeze and the Brambles. And there's a tiny little part of my brain that has a little bit of time for The Wind in the Willows. We talked about podcasts we recommend on the last episode. Check out the What a Cartoon episode on The Wind in the Willows. It's fascinating to learn about. And check out the stop motion cartoon. It's from, I want to say, the 80s, might even be the 70s, but it's like, it's weird. It's weird in a cool way, and it's very, very chill. I might watch some when we're done here, actually. So that's what George's devolves into. DW, the only person who's interested in this is DW. She says, I like this story. It has animals, invests. Yeah, they're not really biting on George's story here. The tower starts to fall. By this point, it's like, it's not a straight single line of cows. There's like cows lined up in columns vertically, horizontally. They've got the game board, the game box on the top, and the tower starts to fall. And Carl is trying to keep it steady, and he needs more people to help him. And Bud's like, "I'm sorry, I just wanted to find out what happened in the Bionic Bunny." Carl just tells Bud exactly what happens from memory, including the commercials. He remembers all the commercials. So it turns out the one episode of Bionic Bunny that Carl had seen is this special. And he has a strong enough memory that he can remember every part of it. Or he summarizes it very dispassionately. He's not really interested in it. Finally, the cable comes back, the special comes back on, and it ends exactly how Carl says it did. But in all this time, of course, everyone liked the versions that everyone else came up with instead of what actually happened. And they do finish off their tower. It's so tall that Mom is the one who puts on the Bionic Bunny. It's kind of like a headband with the rabbit ears, his little antenna thing. They have the little toy version of theirs. So that's what they top it off with.
This episode, have you ever seen Welcome to Eltingville?
That sounds really familiar.
It was an Adult Swim pilot based on the Eltingville.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And the one episode that they made of the animated series is like an extended argument, an extended kind of geek argument, the kind that we don't really see these days now that things like Marvel are kind of mainstream and the biggest properties in the world. But there was a time where the only people who knew about that stuff were nerds and geeks.
Yes.
And in Welcome to Eltingville, the whole episode is kind of this extended, do you remember this? Who did this when and this happened? And, you know, who name all the Star Trek captains, stuff of that nature. And Buster and Arthur's kind of initial back and forth, I think there's at one point where Arthur indignantly says, "Are you saying I don't know Bionic Bunny?" That really reminded me of that argument from Welcome to Eltingville. Kind of a weird reference, but...
Again, another great What a Cartoon podcast. If you want the history on Welcome to Eltingville, if you go and watch it now, especially our younger listeners, this is going to feel like a relic, because I watched this semi-recently for that What a Cartoon episode, and it was like, it's like a time capsule of how nerds used to be, still kind of are deep down, but like what being a nerd looked like in the late 90s, and it's a much different animal than what it is today. It's so fascinating. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's worth checking out too. And now, a word from us kids.
And now, a word from us kids.
It's a class of kids who are also working together, like Bud and DW and Carl and everybody. They're creating a tower with teamwork, which is what they say several times. What I did like here is that the larger lesson in breaking the kids up into groups and accomplishing a task of building a tower is to teach everybody that our brains work in different ways, and that's okay. So some people are better at some tasks than other people. Some people get frustrated a little bit easier than others and need to do what they need to, like, do what they need to do to calm down or re-regulate. And I thought that this was a good lesson to impart, along with probably a fun activity for the kids.
This is the rare case where the Word From Us Kids episode, which is usually kind of a pretty obvious, it's either a really obvious kind of reiteration of an episode's moral, or it's totally has nothing to do with the episode whatsoever. Mm. This is the rare kind where, it actually recontextualized the episode for me. And I was like, oh, that's what that episode was about. Like, I don't know. I wasn't able to break through the kind of surface narrative of, okay, they really want to remember this Bionic Bunny episode and they're distracting Carl and they build the tower. And then with this A Word From Us Kids, I was like, oh, I got outsmarted by the kids show. It all came together for me. And I was like, oh, it's about, you know, people's brains work differently. And if you could use that as a strength, we're greater than the sum of our parts. This is one of the first times a Word From Us Kids segment ever did that. So I thought that was notable.
I'm going to keep it a buck with you, Lucas. I didn't put that together, so I'm glad that you said that out loud, because this children's show went over my head. But thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that. The thing I wrote down is that I said the teacher looks a little bit like Greta Gerwig. So that's what I was focusing on, and that's what I meant when we started off talking about the Oscars.
Hi, I'm Carter Loggie, one of the listeners of the Elwood City Limits podcast. If you want to support the podcast, here's some things that could help you. You can listen to the podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. You could also check out their YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/ElwoodCityLimits. That's where I usually listen to the podcast. For social media, there's X, formerly known as Twitter, at ECL Podcasts, Instagram, instagram.com/ElwoodCityLimits. For Twitch streams, it's twitch.tv/ElwoodCityLimits. There's also Facebook, facebook.com/ElwoodCityLimits, and Tumblr, elwoodcitylimits.tumblr.com. You can also go to their website, which is elwoodcitylimits.libsyn.com. If the podcast is not on the service you use, just let them know. Finally, pay as little as $1 a month to get bonus content and getting ECL episodes a week early. You can go to their Patreon, which is patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits. That's all for me. Let's get back to the show.
And now, back to Arthur!
The second part of our episode is Bunny Trouble. And we start this off with Arthur and DW. You know, Lucas, there are some things that you can do by yourself and other things that you can do together. But if you're looking for a lost bunny, you may need special help. And I kind of thought we would never get one of these again, but it's time for an Arthur meme alert, because when Arthur here and DW, they're both doing the cold open, DW says something you can do by yourself is eating all the pancakes. She says accusingly to Arthur, and we see Arthur put a fork into a stack of pancakes, open his mouth, and put them all in at the same time. This screenshot of Arthur with his weird open mouth, I've seen this around both as a meme unto itself and also as an illustration of like the latter days Arthur animation doesn't always look great.
What's interesting, when we're watching these episodes on YouTube now, because a lot of the newer episodes of Arthur are on YouTube officially, mm-hmm. and you can see the engagements. You can see what parts of the episode on the seeking bar are the most watched, and there is a huge spike right at the frame where Arthur is shoving the pancakes in his mouth. So people were seeking this out to see this part in context, I guess.
I don't want to bag on the animation too much. We've already said how we feel about it, and as I've said, I think I'm a little bit warmer to it than you are, Lucas. But that frame. And I had it paused because I wanted to take my own screen cap of it. It looks bad. Like, it looks real bad. Like, especially when you look at it, you've got everything Arthur, and then they put the mouth a little bit askew on his face, so you can see where his mouth would normally go, and you're like, my brain can't accept what it looks like. It looks wrong. So, like, and I imagine a lot more people feel that way. And I know that sometimes I get hung up about silly things. Like, one of the things in latter-day Arthur that drives me nuts is when his eyes don't line up. And I know I've said that before. I apologize. But this was a case of just like, okay, I generally feel good about the way that this animation moves and looks. But this was just like, that looked real, real bad.
I'm almost excited by that, though, because it's like, you know, in the Flash era, the worst things could look is that everything looks like a paper doll and it kind of looks crummy. It's almost like comes all the way back around, horseshoe theory, so bad it's good. If we could get weird off frames of Arthur that look really bad, I feel like that's something we've been missing for a while. I know you screen capped the show, Will, so I'm almost optimistic about more opportunities to see more kind of crummy, weird-looking Arthurs.
Can we get an entire Arthur episode that's animated like Xavier Renegade Angel?
One can only hope.
Like, just let him go. Just let him go nuts. Like, let's do it. And have the Xavier Renegade Angel guy voice him, too. Who cares? Other activities you can do together include homework. It's a clip of Arthur and Buster doing homework together. And then if you're looking for a lost bunny, you need special help, which is a carrot that Arthur gets out of the fridge. Now, when we talk about lost bunny, what we mean is that DW is her preschool is going into vacation week, and she volunteered to take care of Larry, the class bunny. And I wrote in all caps, animal hierarchy.
Okay, I mean, we might as well get this out of the way now. Yeah. You know, folks, we try to keep the podcast content fresh, engaging. We've been talking about the same kids show for over half a decade now. You know, we try to find new things to talk about, not just rehash the same old bits or whatever. This episode's throwing it in our face.
Well, I know.
This is the most animal hierarchy episode we've ever seen. At some point, LaDonna says, what does she say? She's like the very good with bunny situations.
She's the bunny whisperer.
She's the bunny whisperer. One would hope, LaDonna. One would hope.
You know? You're the really you whisperer. Because, big deal.
You know, listen, if we don't talk about this now, who knows when's the next time we're really going to be able to get deep into the animal hierarchy.
Yeah.
They do call themselves, the bunnies specifically, of all the animals, I feel like the bunnies are the ones where, you know, we never really hear Sue Ellen or Francine talking about what animal they are.
That's true.
The only ones are really, you know, Buster. They're always talking about Buster. You know, he's a sad, sad bunny.
Yes.
Art Garfunkel iconically sung that he was a sad, sad bunny. TV isn't funny. And he's always talking about his ears. He's doing gags with his ears. The other animals essentially act like they're human beings. And the fact that they are animals isn't really brought up. They don't have special skills because they're animals, that kind of thing. The one that they do kind of set apart from the rest are the bunnies. You know, in the lice episode, he was worried about the lice and his big ears.
Yes.
And it's made notable. They're talking about, I'm going to jump on the bunny's head. So it's clear that the bunnies are different and that they are bunnies. They've referred to them as such many times. So of all the things to be a class pet, the fact that it's a bunny and they call it as such, well, it just makes your head spin, Will.
I know. Like, this is so brazen. Like, man. Like, I have some notes peppered in along here, but right. This episode heavily involves LaDonna and Bud, both of whom are bunnies. And it's like, oh, it's like LaDonna calls herself a bunny whisperer. And just like, what's the difference, though? And Lucas, that's a great point. I'm so glad that you said that about how Buster's species is the only one that's explicitly brought up. The only other one I would say maybe is that, like, Arthur spells A-A-R-D-V-A-R-K, but that's kind of like a wink-wink, nudge-nudge kind of thing. They don't acknowledge these. Like, when I was a kid, when I was younger, I didn't even know some of the animals that these kids were trying to approximate. Like, I didn't realize at first that Binky was a dog, or Francine and Muffy are monkeys, or stuff like that, or that Sue Ellen's a cat. So, but they will say, like, Buster is a bunny. Like, you can almost call him Buster Bunny, but that's Tiny Toons, not Arthur. Yeah, this is real strange, and we do see this bunny quite a bit. Larry, I will also say, Larry is very cute. the episode starts off with like a nice little shot of Pal eating something in his sleep, and I wanted to take a breath here and just be like, you know who we haven't heard from in a while? Pal's voice actor. And nothing against that voice actor, but boy, it's just nice to have Pal being a dog, and it's nice to have Larry being a rabbit. This could have been a dog and baby episode so easy, dude, with Larry being taken home by DW, and he makes friends with Kate and Pal and runs afoul of Nemo. Like, ugh, this could have been worse really easily. So I'm glad that the animals,
funny animals.
Well,
the non-funny
animals. I'm glad they're not talking right now, and I hope it stays that way. We'll see. Anyway, DW taking home Larry. Miss Moore.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, yes. Will. I feel like we see this in American cartoons all the time. There's a class pet, class turtle, class whatever.
Yeah.
No one I've ever met here in Canada has ever had a class pet. It seems like an American thing.
So I didn't, but another class in my grade did, and it was they hatched chicks from eggs.
Wow.
So and I was jealous. I wanted to be in that class because it seemed really cool. But you're right. It falls in the category of classes that had swimming or schools that had swimming pools of like, who's that for? Who does that? It does seem to be a little bit more of, I'll say, maybe stereotypically an American thing. I'm sure maybe there's other Canadian schools that did it. But apart from little baby chicks in grade two, no, we didn't have one either. And I don't know of any of my friends who did, except for my friends in Miss Ryan's grade two class. So yes, Miss Morgan not so subtly denies the Tibbles' request to take care of Larry, which she says like, oh, we wanted to bring him to a bit more of a peaceful home. And just like, I don't even want to think about what the Tibbles would be doing to or with Larry. DW very excited to be taking home Larry, very protective of him as well, because she wants to prove that she can take care of him. And Mom says that it makes sense that DW would want to take care of Larry because her favorite book used to be Hop Along Bunny, which we see a little bit of an excerpt from here. This is not as long as in the last episode Fern's thing, but we do get to switch up the animation style a little bit as we see the illustrations of Hop Along Bunny and done in a different style than what Arthur looks like right now.
Well, even more so when we see it during the dream sequence later on in the episode. Which almost becomes, you know, Fern's sequence reminded me of like other PBS shows from this time. The dream sequence that happens later on in this episode reminded me of Homestar Runner. I was like, this is Homestar Runner esque. But we'll get to that in a moment.
I totally see what you mean. I wanted to note here that Hop Along Bunny, I wonder if it's part of a series with Hop Along the Frog, which is the book that DW borrowed from the library when she got her library card. Just two hop-along stories. I wonder if that there's meant to be any connection there. Mom reads DW Hop-Along Bunny, and she gets the feeling that, well, maybe Larry's like Hop-Along Bunny. Maybe he wants to be outside and eating the grass and like being in nature. Maybe that's what he wants. So she takes Pal's leash, and she takes Larry outside. There's explicit instructions on his cage to not let him out unless he is securely fastened restrained, so to speak. So she takes Larry outside. The leash is hanging off of Larry. He's much smaller than Pal. And she doesn't secure him. And when DW's not looking, Larry hops away. And DW is very upset about this. So she enlists Arthur to help. And she's you know, near in tears at this point. I forget exactly what led into this line. I apologize. But there's at one point where, oh, it's where Arthur eventually enlists LaDonna's help here along with Bud. And he says like, oh yeah, LaDonna's really good with animals. Like she once had a pet rat. And DW just says straight to his face, a rat is not a pet. It's not even like it's not even especially pet. It's like a rat is not a pet. She's just like, no, a rat's not a pet. Like just like unwavering in how just like, no, that's stupid. Why would you say that? As we mentioned before, LaDonna comes with Bud to the backyard. She's a bunny whisperer, Lucas. Is it because she is one?
She's like, hey, Larry, man, you gotta rein it in and come back. We miss you.
Well, and so her method here is to do some sort of meditation circle and cast Larry's name out into the ether, speak it out loud so that he can like follow it home or some such nonsense. Meanwhile, Bud is taking care of DW. He says, come on a picnic table. I'll tell you a story. DW says, it better not be one of your boring ones. So even she has her limits with Bud. There is a brief part here where Larry winds up in the Tibbles' backyard while they're playing cowboys, but thankfully he gives them the slip. They want to take Larry so that they can prove that DW couldn't take care of him, and then they'll be heroes for getting him back, but he runs away. Hops away. Larry does end up back in the Reeds' backyard, and thanks to bait from a carrot, I don't really know if it's thanks to LaDonna's chanting or anything, but Arthur puts down some carrot pieces and they put him in a net and they catch him. While all this has been going on and in between crying intermittently, DW has cried herself to sleep and listening to Bud. And they get both of them back into the room, DW and Larry. And we have a dream sequence here near the very end of the episode where DW dreams that she's in the Hopalong Bunny book. And the Tibbles, in this version of the book, the Tibbles scare Larry away by calling DW Bunny Loser. Which, like, it means, what they mean is she loses bunnies. She's a bunny loser.
Right.
But when the first time I saw that, I was like, I was just like, that's a really uninspired insult. Just like, ha ha, you have a bunny and you're a loser. Bunny loser. I'm like, all right, guys, go back to the drawing board on that one. So again, maybe I'm just like out of it today, but that also was like, I think this children's show is going over my head.
No, I don't know. But Bunny Loser is, if you've been watching Friday Night SmackDown, it's kind of Arthur's version of Diarrhea Dwayne, where it's like they're trying to get us to chant Bunny Loser, but I don't think it's going to catch on.
Yeah, it's, you know what? If it, when The Rock was feuding with CM Punk, I could have seen him going Bunny Loser, Bunny Loser. Or maybe if he feuds with Bad Bunny, he can say that. DW wakes up from her dream. Like we said, and like you were talking about, Lucas, this is where we get the animation in the Hopalong Bunny book style, which I like your comparison to Homestar Runner. I can definitely see what you mean by that. DW wakes up. She sees that Larry is back where he belongs. And Arthur feeds him a carrot, which she's like, he doesn't like carrots. But then, I mean, obviously Larry does, and she admits that, okay, Arthur, maybe you do know a little something about taking care of bunnies. Man, that was a weird one to that ended up being a weird one to talk about. But Lucas, let's touch base here on what we just watched. Let's go back to he said another in the surprisingly versatile lineup of Arthur episodes that have the Rashomon storytelling style. What did you think of it?
I know. Well, to use a Chinese movie comparison, Will, it's a little bit like Jet Li in Hero, where you hear the story told from all these different... And Jet Li keeps going, no, that's not what really happened. This happened.
Oh, Hero was a great movie.
A fantastic movie. I really liked... He said.
I know.
It doesn't sound right.
I know. I kept slipping up to he said. He said. Yeah.
Yes. I really liked it. Maybe my favorite Bud episode. I mean, it's not really a Bud episode, but probably the least irritating Bud's ever been. I think Carl was used greatly, where, you know, he's not a caricature. He's just, you know, he's a character with certain traits, and they used his traits to cause drama, just like they use George's or they use Buster's. All these characters are kind of, we're trying to accomplish two tasks. We're trying to build this tower, and we're also trying to kind of recount this Bionic Buddy episode, and try to do them both at the same time is making them both more complicated. And it's not until they realize, and again, I needed the word from us kids to spell this out for me. It's not until they realize that they need to play to everyone's strengths that they could get all this accomplished and then some. And I liked how, you know, the whole episode's in one location. Dare I say it's a bottle episode in a way. We don't leave the living room. So I don't know. I thought it was really creative with the writing and the storytelling. And for an episode where the drama is, can they build this toy tower and will their cable go back on? I thought it was actually fairly engaging. So, thumbs up for He Said, He Said.
I think you're a bit kinder on this episode than I am, to be honest with you. There are good things about it. I will admit, and chief among them is Carl. I'm very happy that Carl continues to be used, not just as like another character on the roster, but they're using him in a way that makes sense for his character and makes him feel featured without being, you know, token representation. They don't really say anything about his autism in this episode, which they don't have to, especially if you've seen him before. And yeah, I think what I really wasn't crazy about is that a lot of this episode is watching Bionic Bunny footage, And it kind of made me realize that, like, I don't really care about when we focus on Bionic Bunny for too long, which is why I didn't take a whole lot of notes for this episode. It's just like, all right, Bionic Bunny, you know, meh. It's like how does this episode actually go sort of thing. It's like, I feel like we've also done this before. The Wind in the Willows parody really took me by surprise, and I liked that a lot too. And the way that it tied into A Word from Us Kids, this is how the podcast can improve viewings for me. Makes a lot of sense in what they were trying to get across. It's all right. I don't have any strong feelings for it, but I'd say I like more than I dislike. Well, and Bunny Trouble was funny to talk about, for sure. So I'm glad that our conversation ended up living up to that. It's also, like, I guess, feeling kind of mid about it. It didn't feel like it wasted my time. It didn't feel like, you know, insulting or boring or anything like that, especially because Larry's so cute. I think he's just a cute little bunny. But it definitely brings up a few questions that were distracting me from engaging with the episode. And it's very much, if you pardon the term here, it's a very fluffy episode, because it's really just about they lose the bunny and then he comes back. That's about it. There's nothing huge on the line, and that's okay. And also another example of where, like, Bud's in this, and he's not very annoying. So I can see the use in that. I guess I would say I like Bunny Trouble a tiny bit more, but also still kind of in the middle on it.
Yeah, it's funny. The term you used was mid, and I have that in my notes as well. I have no thoughts either way, but, you know, the most fun about Bunny Trouble is this kind of meta conversation about what does it mean for the animal hierarchy. I gestured to this at the start of our conversation. LaDonna, you know, why does this have to be LaDonna in this episode, right? Like, what reason, what does LaDonna do in this episode besides saying, I can speak bunny, that literally any other character that we're already familiar with, whether it's Muffy or the Brain or anyone else, could have fulfilled that role and probably have been more interesting or had more interesting things to say or do. LaDonna doesn't have a characterization in here. She has some sort of unseen Louisiana rural wisdom, I suppose, but that's not really like a character trait, right? Like, if it was Brain who was looking for the bunny, he'd be like, well, my research tells me that the bunny's operated like this. Or if it was Muffy, she would like hire her butler to go searching for the bunny. There's just more stuff you could do with the other characters. And so when one of those slots is filled by LaDonna or Bud, I just get so frustrated because it feels like they're wasting a significant amount of the episode with not much substance. That makes it sound like I'm way more negative on it than it actually is. Again, Bunny Trouble, pretty inoffensive, like you said. I think mid is the operative word here. But that really annoyed me.
Well, and as was happening in our Discord recently, there's a bit of discussion about people's feelings on LaDonna and Bud and negativity versus positivity. So, in fact, having LaDonna here as the person raised more questions than was necessary. So, yeah, a bit of a weird one. But, I mean, we've had pretty decent success with this season so far. So it's doing pretty well, and, you know, we were going to hit the DW and Bud episodes sooner or later. You know, if we can get out of here with Dog and Baby, then we're rolling. There we go. That's another episode of Arthur in the Books. Thank you so much for listening. Wanted to remind our patrons that at the end of March, Lucas and I are going to be returning to For the Kids, and we're going to be going outside, sort of outside, the PBS Kids foray again as we talk about Bob the Builder. I'm going to find out a little bit more about this show. I'm interested to see, because this is a real hit for, I guess it would be more your age group, Lucas, maybe like a bit younger than you. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not super familiar with it, so we'll get into it on the,
but another instance of us going in a little bit blind, but very interested to find out more about it. But we've got one more ECL before we get there. And of course, you can get your Elwood City Limits episodes a week early if you subscribe, patreon.com/ElwoodCityLimits, as well as the Bob the Builder episode of For the Kids coming up at the end of the month. You can also talk about LaDonna and Bud on our Discord. That's another perk of being our patron. So next Elwood City Limits episode, we're going to be talking about Bud's naughty problem, and that's my grandma. So sometimes we get a little bit of like, ooh, what could this be about? It's like, no, Bud's in this episode. In fact, it's a Bud episode. So, Lucas, I'm glad that you liked Bud so much here, because we done and got you of him. You like him so much. Anyway, we'll get through it together, and maybe it won't be all that bad. Maybe it won't be bad at all. And we'll be checking that out next time on Elwood City Limits. My name's Will Young, and for Lucas Mancini,
a Ziggo, what?
We'll see you next time.